Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome along to the Keith Andrews Show with me this week again. I told you you're on again, Joe. You didn't believe me, but you're back by popular demand.
Can't quit you.
Hasn't been a great week, has it? Let's be honest.
No.
It's doom and gloom. It's a little bit sad. Still a bit sceptical around the whole thing, and it's certainly not enjoyable.
Well, I mean, the week has kicked off with a Keith Andrews rant. I mean, that's what everybody's been seeing on their phone. Were you surprised? So you blow up in Sky Sports, and then I click on the video. You didn't actually blow up. I would say it was more sad than a rant. But what's been the fallout from your Keith Andrews rant over the last couple of days?
What do you mean by fallout?
Being approached by people? Are people over in England ringing you going, bloody hell?
Yeah, my phone's been a bit hot in the last day or two. But I think you know I don't have any preconceived plans about what I'm going to say. I'm very passionate about our team. I'm a fan. I've been to our games, and I mentioned it last night on with you and Dan, that I've been a paying fan, gone to Glasgow a few years ago with my uncles and my wife, flew up when I was playing at Watford. And bearing in mind at that stage, I was still eligible to be playing top championship football. So I'm a big Ireland fan. Went to that, trudged back through the streets after a miserable performance in Glasgow, walked all the way back in with my 70-year-old uncle. It's like, that, no problem, like I can still get on with it. And then some of the performances have been a little bit, I'm not quite knowing what you're going to get under this manager in the early parts, but again, understanding it. Georgia home, Georgia away, they had 74% possession against us, dominated passing, tripled the amount of pass that we had. Again, look, means to an end, we're going in the right direction in terms of, I can see that he can get results, but the last 12 months, I suppose that's been the biggest thing. You obviously know me very well from being in here in the last few years, and I don't go on rants. I think I'm quite calculated in the way I approach things, and I'm realistic in terms of what we can achieve. If anybody just sees the other night, will say, "Oh well, I'm going off one," but I wasn't going off, and I just had enough about where we're going and how we're trying to get there, because it should be better.
So it's the last 12 months that has turned you in particular.
Okay. Last 12 months have been shocking. Like
Has been kicked off by the Stoke debacle as well. Is that part of your issue?
Yeah, I think so. I think the obviously the Denmark second
so that's our 12
leg
months
of the playoff,
really. Yeah.
And then the kind of doom and gloom all over the Christmas period. Then January comes up, Stoke decide to make a managerial change with Mark Hughes. Martin O'Neill gets linked, and that the way that was dealt with probably didn't sit particularly well with me. And I said at the time, if I was a player in that position, I wouldn't be too impressed, because I'm hurting. Going to be looking at a World Cup with the team that you just smashed, you're going to be playing it, and your manager's flirting with the idea of maybe pressing the eject button, whereas obviously you're wanting a little bit of togetherness. But even the way that was dealt with wasn't particularly great. A few meaningless friendlies maybe. The only highlight was Declan Rice, really, in around March and the summer, the performances. And if we have everybody fit, we have him as a player coming in, and all right, you're clutching at straws to a degree in terms of what we're doing going forward and how we can be positive about this. But it's just unravelled.
The damning stat for me, I mean, the last year has been difficult. The Rice thing really affects the vibes. The Stephen Ward situation is unfortunate. The Stoke thing is a bit of a mess. And there's not that many games where, you know, there's been like maybe 9 games. Some of them are friendlies. So I don't count a lot of them. I suppose the big stat which jumps out at me now increasingly is that Vienna, November 2016, was a real high point. You know, Wes puts the ball through and McLean scores. It's a big win. Since November 2016, 11 competitive games. 11. 2 wins. Moldova. And then Cardiff. Which was a real smash and grab job. It was amazing. And it's the kind of result O'Neill can get. But I mean, you're not going to win 1-0 too often playing like that, and Wales have since beaten us twice. So 2 wins in 11, it does feel like it's actually unravelling. It's been a campaign of 2 halves here for O'Neill since 2013.
Yeah, I agree, and I made the point earlier about some of the performances weren't great along that way, but means to an end. And let's not forget as well, like this Euros, and he's come out fighting really in the press, saying he will get us to Euro 20. He should be getting us Euro 2020 with this new format, because if this was the traditional qualification process, we'd be out of it.
Yeah.
Or we'd have we'd have a serious task on our hands trying to get through a 10-game group, maybe, or a 12 top, where you're looking and you've got 1 point from nine from the first three games available. So we're fortunate in the fact that practically one in two teams are going to be playing at Euro 2020. The elephant in the room is it's in Dublin. Two of the games are in Dublin. Yeah. Can you imagine if we're not going to be there?
For people who didn't see the latest O'Neill comments, so the way the press conference works, people are fairly familiar at this stage. There's the broadcast section, which is always terrible. One microphone, you have to pass it around. You can only ask one question at a time. So, I mean, they know that, you know that. Mm. They can just not answer your question and it's on to the next one, which is about something completely different. So there's no flow. There's then the print section, which happens afterwards. So they all run into the corner of the room and they get O'Neill. And the quotes are in all the papers. You can read them in all the papers. I've Ken Early's one here. And so it just seems like it was an odd exchange. I'm curious for your thoughts on it. So O'Neill says at one point, at the end of the day, we'll have people ready for the games and I'll be ready and we'll go through. Simple as that. Ken writes, doubtful glances darted about the huddle. Did he really just say we'll go through? And the journalists say, you mean we'll go through to the Euros? O'Neill, yeah. You're saying that now? Absolutely. We're good enough. You mean we'll go through to the finals? Of course, yes. What gives you that optimism? Because I'm good. It seemed people who were there, Dan mentioned it last night as well, was talking to him off air. It's just kind of slightly odd, very bullish, but just very odd exchange. Things like, I will win because I'm good, kind of an exchange.
Well, look, he's not gone through a good phase in his managerial career, is he? Probably the worst, let's be honest. So he's coming out fine. It doesn't really surprise me. Mm. And he's backing himself. We all know he goes back to his CV to a degree in terms of what he does, doesn't do. But we're fortunate, because when it comes to March, we will have a different kind of format and we have the opportunity to get through. And if we don't get through that, we've got the possibility of a playoff.
Yeah.
So we should be qualifying. We've actually got a graph up on screen there, Joe, of that Martin O'Neill's win percentage rate compared to the last four or five international managers. Brian Kerr, 55% from 33 games. Jack, over a much longer period, 50%. And you drop down a little bit with Mick, 68 games, 43%. Trapp, 64 games, 41%. And then literally the same as Steve Staunton, which we all know what way that went, 35%. Martin's obviously played about three times the amount of games as Stan, again, on 35%. So I suppose going back to what we were talking about and where I was in the first three, 4 years of the reign, I was acceptant of it, even though some of the results, some of the performances still weren't great.
And you had your misgivings over preparation.
Yes, very much so. But then when those elder players start retiring and new younger players come into the fold, they need different preparation for a game. And I've been quite vocal about that these younger players need detail. It's not quite happening. So maybe he hasn't evolved in the way he should with the players that he's got at his disposal.
And that's your answer to the point, which is going to be made straight away. Lads, come on. Deep down, you know the players aren't good enough.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who have that view.
Yeah, do you not? Do you?
Increasingly, I'm not sure how much better he can be doing. Actually, I was looking out there last night. I was looking at Aidan O'Brien trying very hard. He's just limited. I mean, he's done brilliantly in his career to get to Millwall and everything.
Yeah.
You're looking at his options all over the pitch. And I mean, I'm torn. As well as, I sort of think as well, if you're going to spend €3 million and get rid of a manager or call for a manager to go, then that final game, i.e. the other night, should be crisis territory. Mm. And actually, the issues from Saturday were addressed. It was much improved. They tried to play ball. They tried to do right things.
But it feels more like we've had the couple of knockout blows with Denmark away, with Cardiff away, with the stuff off the field.
That's a fair point, yeah.
And then this, I know what you're saying about the actual performance tonight. If you take these two games as standalone games, then I agree with your point. But at the moment, it's feeling a bit like torture. That we're kind of just constantly getting jabbed. It's just constant. And it's been going on now for 12 months. And he will make the point there's only X amount of games in that period. And, you know, we don't get enough time. It's not like 12 months at club level, which would obviously be catastrophic.
Yeah.
They're split out so much.
Yeah. No, look, I'm very torn on the players issue, because ordinary players can look very good and very good players can look very ordinary if they're in the wrong system. I'm sure you've seen that. I'm sure you've had days where you're in a good system and you're playing great and you feel good. And you look much better than you could be some days. And I'm sure there's days you've looked way worse than you are. So Look, it was very striking. Confidence was so low the other night. I mean,
I think that was the biggest thing for men.
The complete like unwillingness of Hendrik Harder. You gave Christie a pass, but he was guilty of two.
Yeah.
The unwillingness of them to get turned and play a pass. They just didn't want to do it. It was, ugh. The whole thing was tentative.
Yeah. We've got Gary Breen on the line. Gary, thanks for joining us, pal.
Good afternoon.
How are we, buddy? Look, let's go back to the first game. So talk to me about Denmark, the performance against Denmark, the three at the back. How would you assess that 90-minute performance?
Very disjointed. I was surprised at some of the decisions to play the likes of Christie in midfield, because we're talking about international centre midfielders here. And that's not a criticism of Christie in terms of what he gives Ireland, because he always puts in a shift, but I couldn't understand it. There was no surprise that he went to a back three, but in terms of the selection, there were some massive surprises. And Cyrus Christie wasn't in isolation. You've got Jeff Hendricks playing in a 10 area, and he's been quite bullish this week, saying that I want to play the position that I excelled in the Euros. And he's saying he hasn't been able to play that. So he's playing with his back to goal. It doesn't really suit him. Then you've got Harry Arter playing holding midfield. And we know this has been proved. He's not a holding midfielder. He doesn't have the discipline, doesn't have the athleticism, and certainly doesn't sense danger well enough. But then on top of that, again, you've got the likes of McLean, who came out after the game at Denmark saying, I didn't know whether to engage, I didn't know when to cover. And when players say that to me, that just strikes straight away as, you haven't done the work on the training field. Simple as that. Now, you might have difficulties in terms of the players you're playing against. They're asking questions that you look to the bench and say, I'm not quite sure here. But that's a basic, basic part of playing five at the back, when to release your wing backs. And he didn't have a clue.
Did you think, going into the game on Tuesday, Brini, with Wales, that work had been done? I thought it was better between him and Kevin Long, James McLean, that left-hand side. But you're right, during the 90 minutes against Denmark, it was a case of, if anything, it was safety first, turned quickly into a back five because they simply didn't know.
Listen, in terms of all our great results under Martin O'Neill, and even the Germany game, it's all about defending deep in numbers. We've tried to be a bit more open at times when we're chasing games, we get cut to pieces. That's a simple, basic fact. Our defence, throughout Martin O'Neill's reign, has served us quite well, but they get an awful lot of protection in the fact that they sit on the 18-yard box and they've got numbers around them. It's very difficult to get through them. And even the performances against Wales in the previous qualifying campaign, Wales couldn't unlock us. But certainly when they went to Cardiff, they learnt their lessons, that they kept that ball alive at every opportunity. Wayne Hennessy would get the ball, play it straight away. The ball go out for a throw, play it straight away, just to stop us getting our good defensive structure up. Because if we're allowed to do that, we're very difficult to break down. But the biggest factor on that Denmark game, certainly, and there was an improvement then in the second game against Wales, was our back three squeezed the pitch. Too often they want to be sat on the edge of their box. It's not good enough. You need to squeeze it up just to condense that midfield area, keep us in touch then with our front line. So if at any time we do force a turnover, invariably we can play the ball to Shane and we can get numbers in support and we can get people forward, we can get the crowd on board. And I think at times against Wales, we did that better. But to suggest that they were on the training ground between both games, working it, looking at the videos, I'm not buying that.
So going into the game, are you comfortable into the second half? Are you comfortable with him keeping the back three, or are we at a stage now where you're actually thinking probably doesn't really matter what type of system we're working with?
Listen, and I've said this to you before, Keith, and I know you have your opinions about Trapattoni. I don't care about what system you choose. That's at the discretion of the manager. All I care about is you're well-drilled and every one of you know what you're expected to do. Now, I remember going to watch you guys train at Arsenal. I don't know what game it was you were prior to doing under Trapattoni. And I remember watching him physically grabbing your players and moving you around the pitch, saying, when the ball's here, Trapattoni would do that. Now, he may well have his criticisms, but I could tell there straight away that's an organised team. Now, listen, he made a massive improvement from the mess he took over from Steve Staunton. There's no doubt about that. And whether or not he stayed too long is another argument for another day. But it was organised. Whether or not you agree with his system, you could tell that the work has been done on the pitch. You may be able to give us a better insight into that. But certainly, from what I saw, I could see that the work was being done there.
No, I agree with you. And I agree. And we were very much aware of the level of criticism we were getting about the style of play. But as a player within that structure, and even players that came into the squad, if they've been in for two or three camps, they knew exactly what was required of them in terms of the preparation for a game, the pragmatic approach, the distance between the units. Where clearly now we're at a stage where the players don't know. And we're going, Joe, from trip to trip, not knowing what system it is. It's become a little bit of a joke. What's the team going to be? Yeah. Who knows?
Well, can I ask you both a question then? It's interesting, Trapattoni got results at the start and Martin O'Neill has got results at the start. Mm. Very different methods, admittedly. But I've heard the phrase used, well, maybe O'Neill has stayed on one campaign too long. And it's interesting, Gary says maybe Trapattoni stayed on one campaign too long. What tends to happen in those campaigns where a manager has maybe stayed on one too long? What goes wrong there?
Well, I can only speak about Trapattoni's era, and the way it ended with the Euros, it felt like the beginning of the end.
Okay.
Probably when we qualified, the whole build-up to the Euros felt a little bit tired. Being together in camp, we've spoke a lot about that. And then the start of a new campaign, I don't think there was the same kind of excitement and kind of, I don't know, vigour around the camp.
Okay.
With this one, I don't know. I really don't know what's gone on. Our players fed up. We mentioned about what's gone on in the last 12 months. I know as a player being in that squad, if Martin was the manager and he's flirting with the idea of Stoke, when you're looking to be really united, it wouldn't sit well with me at all. And the way he speaks about the players in the press constantly has to drain you.
Yeah.
You mentioned about confidence on the pitch. I think it's very, very evident that they're not confident. They're not... I don't know where Bruni agrees. The best managers I've ever played under are the ones that made you feel 7 foot tall.
So is it inconceivable that come March it will be a fresh start, European qualification starts, you know, fresh excitement, let's go, it's a clean slate, all that kind of thing.
And we've had so many fresh starts, haven't we? We're on about rebuilding after the Denmark drubbing, and suddenly there's been no green shoots recovery. The only positivity was Declan Rice. Let's not go down that road again. But Keith is right to say in terms of a manager and what he does. And I've no doubt, listening to these players, that Martin O'Neill probably does make them feel great in and around the changing room and certainly that way, because that's what everyone's identified as his biggest skill, his motivational. Now, I always stress that was a bit negated, really, in terms of coming to national team football, because you don't need motivation to play for a country. So that's what I was always surprised about. But the very fact that he's now talking along the lines of we ain't got players good enough sounds exactly like Trapattoni towards the end, who kept referencing we don't have Italy's strength, we don't have England's strength, we don't have the bigger nation's strength. And that used to drive me mad, because what we do have is players put on that green jersey. And it's not a romantic view, because I've seen it. Players put that jersey on and they elevate themselves to a level they're not playing at club level. And if he keeps referencing that they're not good enough, those players may well be turning around thinking, what are you talking about? It's your job to make us better.
Have you lost faith in the management team, Gary? Is that where you're at?
I'm at this stage now where I've lost faith in their preparations. And even when we were getting them results against Germany, I was under no illusions. We got battered in that game. That could have been 4-5-0, the chances that they missed. But I'm not going to take away from the fact it was a brilliant, brilliant result for us. But I look at other results, even the Italy game, we were very fortunate up against their second team. So I'm always looking at the actual facts, not necessarily and taking away the emotions from it. And I knew when Martin O'Neill was going in, because I'd heard about how he prepares teams at club level, that he doesn't put the time on a coaching field. So initially, when he made his backroom team, I'm thinking, OK, where are your coaches then? Because Roy Keane's not a coach. He'd done a brilliant job at Sunderland in terms of galvanising the whole team and the city even in terms of getting Sunderland back in the Premier League, but he was never coaching. So then I'm looking at Guppy, does he do the coaching? And I'm hearing no, not particularly. So ultimately you are hearing for these lads, as Keith said, and you know, I don't think they're betraying any confidence or talking out of turn, but we're hearing that there's very little done on the training field, and that's the frustration for me.
And that's the difference now, and I've been quite vocal in the way I've said it in recent months, probably, that the requirements of a player now are different to even when I was playing and when Gary was playing, and within the squads we would have had, you've got voices, you've got leaders that, and I mentioned to you last night, Joe, I'm with Dan, that within games, even if it's not going your way, players of that era and eras gone before were able to adapt within games, were able to get games by the scruff of the neck, organise, drop deep, be together. It was just in you because of the way you'd been brought up and served your apprenticeship, you knew you had to take responsibility. So look, it seems like it's all Martin, it's all Roy, and look, I think they should be doing better, there's no question about that, and they should be giving the players more. And the only pass I can give the players to a degree is the environment that's being created. It's very, very sapping, it's very draining. We've spoke about confidence, but still some of that blame pie has to lie with them.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can be sapped all you want. You can be played in the wrong position, which Harry Arter was. There is no excuse for that slide tackle. Like, if I'm the manager and I'm under pressure and I'm watching that slide tackle on slow motion repeat again and again and again, I'm sorry.
Joe,
if a 14-year-old did that, it doesn't matter if he's a striker, Gary. The players actually, confidence or not, are doing some silly things out there. That was horrendous.
That tackle is not out of character. He does it every week. Yeah. I've seen him play for Cardiff, and this is the crux of the matter. If he's in those forward midfield positions and he's doing those type of tackles, it doesn't matter because you've got a blanket behind you.
Yeah.
And in fact, he can actually influence the game. He does it quite well, to be fair, for Cardiff. He more often than not runs past the centre forward to close people down and has an impact. But you don't play that type of player in your discipline sitting in front of the back four role. You play him in the more advanced positions. But this is a problem for me as well, is that you're talking about laying blame at the players' door as well as the management. But ultimately, this management group have said that they want to be judged on the first team and nothing else. They're not doing anything behind the scenes in terms of working with the lower age groups.
Yeah.
Keith, you've been with them. Were they hands-on to you when you've worked with them? Did you see Martin? Roy? And why are we not seeing them?
This is an issue, Bruni.
These guys are unbelievably experienced footballers. Why are they not contributing to what is happening at the lower reaches of our teams, our lower age groups, and given their brilliant experience to that?
They don't see it as their job.
Michael O'Neill is doing it.
Yeah.
This is my point, Joe.
Yeah.
If they don't see it as their job, then ultimately you're judged on your first team's results.
Yeah.
And that's why they're getting
it. I think it's a really good point, Bruni. And I was just chatting to you before, Joe, you look at the Welsh system. Ushan Roberts is the assistant stroke technical director type role over the last few years. Now he's been brought in, important part of what Giggs is doing, knows every single one of those young players so well. He was the coach of the Welsh 16s team a couple of years ago when I was involved with our 16s at the Victory Shield. They were so poor, the Welsh side. I remember staying in the hotel with him, chatting to him, development, all about development. And I have to be completely honest, at the time I was thinking, a little bit of a cop-out that, because obviously you're getting towards competitive levels of, okay, winning needs to be important, in my opinion, at 16 years of age. He was not fazed at all. They tried to play in a similar type of way. Us, as an Irish team, did a little bit what Cyrus Christie did on Matt Smith, latched onto mistakes in their defensive third, middle third, caught them out, bang, counter-attack. But you can see the fruits of the labour that they've put in the last few years, and there is a conveyor belt. Whereas Gary's right. There's no link-up. I think the link-up between 19s down for our federation is really good. There's a consistency in terms of the way it's played. I think the 21s stands a little bit alone. And then the senior team is on a different stratosphere. There's no cohesion between any of the groups, which is an issue.
It's a massive issue. I mean, we're talking about two of our most famous footballing sons. So why are we not tapping into their knowledge and give us that experience? Yeah. Can you imagine if those two guys turned up with young players? Imagine when we're young players, if the likes of Jack Charlton turned up or Mick McCarthy, you'd be absolutely buzzing.
What about the players they have to work with, Gary?
Listen, I'm under no illusions. It's not one of our strongest squads. And Keith alluded to the fact that we had problem solvers before, and certainly in my generation. But I played in an Ireland team that ultimately probably provides 6 or 7 players in an Ireland's greatest 11.
Yeah.
I'd argue that so that's no problem. But nevertheless, no matter what amount of players, what standard you have, you can make them better by coaching. You can negate the lack of quality by being organised. And I keep saying this, but I've seen it so often. I was at a club at West Ham that probably had the best squad of players that's ever been relegated because we weren't coached. And then likewise, I've stayed up with the teams like Coventry under Gordon Strachan. We knew exactly what we were supposed to do. And I understand, and I'm under no illusions, at times when you meet up with the international team, the time frame you have is very, very tight. That's why you have to make the most of it. And I just don't think we are. And that's my frustration. Not necessarily, I'm never, ever going to give you a comment in terms of whether or not we should change the managers, because that's not what I want to be doing. Yeah. But I will ask questions of this management duo or the whole coaching staff and saying, are you doing enough to get the best out of these players? Because I think they've been getting a bad press. I think they are better than what people are making out. Let's not forget you had 7 Premier League players against that Denmark team. And only 2 of that 11, Richard Keogh, our captain, and Callum Adoda, had not played in the Premier League. All the others had the experience of it. Yeah. So let's stop talking about we don't have this quality. I understand not all of them are week in, week out Premier League players, but nevertheless, they've reached that quality. You can form a better team than we have.
Yeah. We see it time and time again, don't we? At club level, obviously Matt Doherty being the prime one at the moment. Mm. Look, I suppose to try and end on a little bit of a positive note, looking towards March, Gary, we've got the likes of Robbie Brady coming back, James McCarthy, obviously Seamus Coleman. It's a different type of format. It still gives us another bite at the cherry of qualification. Can we be a little bit positive?
No, listen, not after that conversation.
We can. But to be perfectly honest, it's very difficult not to qualify for the Euros.
Yeah.
I mean, there's everyone's playing. I mean, this is why Martin's so bullish. He's no fool. He understands this. And as bad as it is now, it's still very likely we'll qualify. The only thing I will say about those guys coming back, and Richard Keogh is... Well, I really like Richard Keogh. I've always liked him since Lee Carsey was coaching him as a young player at Coventry. So I've always obviously kept an eye out for him. But even his quote was, listen, when we get our good players back, we're a really good team. I'm thinking, if I was one of the other players playing the team now, I'd be thinking, it's not up to you to be commenting on whether or not we're a good team. And I don't know. I just feel that Martin, using all his wiliness, his experience as such, he's just creating a siege mentality. And those players are buying into it. They're thinking that we're attacking them as players, as a team. It's not that. We're not attacking them. I think we couldn't give that team any more support. And you saw that for that 10-minute period in that second half. The crowd was so loud. They were driving the team on and we played well as a result of it. So the crowd are with these players. We're with these players. But don't try and cover up the fact that you ain't coaching them well enough.
Gary, listen, appreciate you taking the time and fingers crossed it gets a little bit better next month.
Great to
see you. It has to. I'm pulling my hair out. Look, he's struggling. Thanks, lads.
See you. Good luck.
He is right, though, in terms of... And I do think there's a general feeling that the players must know that there's been very few. Like, you're going through all the papers. It's not like even one of the headlines, Emmett Malone, Delaney's dilemma, is it the manager or is it the players? You know, there's very few people going for the players.
No. And look, Gary's such a brilliant pundit, a brilliant thinker of the game and great views and reasoned. I mean, Emmett's piece is actually very interesting. There's some great information in it. So, for instance, it's something that hadn't quite twigged with me. You're talking about the underage and how it's all linked together. So it's interesting from the 19s at national level, the national side, there's a bit of linkage. So they're starting the national leagues, as we know. So it's at 15s, 17s, 19s level. And then under 13s is coming on board.
March.
Yeah. So you would think, okay, the national leagues make sense, especially in a country this size. But Emmett just points out in his piece that Rude Doctor, the high performance director, was speaking last week. And it was put to him, well, okay, you've got 15s, 17s, 19s and 13s. What about 14s, 16s and 18s?
Mm.
And so he kind of acknowledged, so what's going to happen here, every second year to these teenagers, a chunk of them, every second year they're going to have to switch back to, I don't know, their Stella Maris club or wherever they played their club
school
football.
School boy club, yeah.
Yeah. And then the following year, go back to the National League and then go back to a League of Ireland club. And guess what? Then go back to their schoolboy. And then go back to a National League.
Well, I think who would 15s is the tricky one because especially 13s, we are kind of 13s to 15s because you're looking and you're thinking physically, are they able to deal with that as a 13-year-old that's just gone off the 13s age limit and gone towards 15s? Mm. It's a little bit of a jump. I think it evens itself out, 17s, 19s. I think another element of that needs to be pushed is we need a 21s.
Well, yeah.
But look, it's such a big jump from 19s to senior level.
I've no doubt. The reason that players are going to have to go from one club to another right through their teenage years, and even just socially, would you want to do that? Even just like, I would turn around to my parents and say, I'm sticking with my club, or I'm not going over and back and forth.
Yeah.
What if I don't get my game when I go back? Yeah. I'm leaving friends. No, I'm not doing it. So the reason is money.
Mm.
If you're wondering, like, is this best practice? No. Like, everyone knows this is not a good idea. It's money.
Mm.
And so, as Emmett points out, you're maybe talking €2.5 million to do this properly.
Yeah.
To have a proper National League all the way through. That's 10 times what the FA are currently giving towards the leagues. It is half what they've been paying in stadium debt and interest. Okay? So when John Delaney, who's a businessman and talks about his credentials in terms of business, when he says, now the stadium debt's no issue, it's under control, gone by 2020, it's having no effect on things. If he allowed questions at the AGM, the first question should be, well then why don't we have an under 14s, 16s and 18s league so that teenage players, our best teenage players, are not jumping back and forth? I thought that was a really interesting piece in the Times today.
There's been some really good ones.
So when we're sitting here in 15 years, and please God, I hope neither of us are. But when we're sitting here in 15 years...
You'll be.
Yeah, probably. When we're sitting here in 15 years and we're still in the same boat, and we'll be saying, well, what's happened in player development over the last 10 years? Mm. I guarantee you, we'll be looking at the national leagues and we'll be going, well, what, that was not a good plan.
Yeah, like we're still in such early stages of this, and without everything else, the schoolboy, that's been that challenge between them and the national leagues, I can see it from their point of view. Unfortunately, it's going to take time.
Why didn't it happen 10 years ago?
Well, shoulda, woulda, coulda. I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. Because you know how passionate I am about
development. John Delaney's not in the job a year or two.
Yeah.
So I think the National Leagues are a good idea. It makes total sense. I think having them right the way through your teenage years makes sense. Mm. One, it should have happened 10 years ago. And two, we shouldn't be here in 2018 and lads are going from National League to schoolboy, back to National League, different coaches, different players around them.
But it gets highlighted. But there was a great article yesterday about cutting the head off the federation. The senior team is the be all and end all.
Yeah.
When that is not going right, everything else starts getting looked at that little bit more closely, doesn't it?
And also the wages we're paying.
Look, so, for me, Joe, go on, okay. You tell us some of the figures that are getting reported.
Okay, well, very quickly. So I'm saying again, it takes $2.5 million to put this league in place properly. So Yogi Love is the best paid manager I could see around Europe, $3.8 million. This is in the Evening Herald. Aidan Fitzmaurice seems to have done the work here, or someone did in the pop-up box beside his piece. Yogi Love is $3.8 million.
Yeah.
Deschamps is 3.5. The Portuguese manager, Fernando Santos, is $2.5 million. Coming in at number four is Martin O'Neill for $2 million. Gareth Southgate, $2 million. You have Herreide at Denmark getting $900,000. So $1.1 million less. There's a massive jump off there for Herreide and Denmark. The Croatian coach Dalic is getting $700,000. Here's the killer. Ronald Koeman, coach of Holland,
yeah,
is on the same wage as Roy Keane. $600,000. Ryan Giggs is on $400,000. Shevchenko, Ukraine, $360,000. We're paying $1.9 million per annum.
Well, we all know how this came about. It was obviously with the support of Dennis O'Brien, yeah, going back to when Trapp took over. You're kind of going out and you're trying to get that elite manager, and certainly Trapp had that reputation. Mm. So it's knocked on from there. So where we are now is we are paying a premium for our management team, but we're not getting a premium service. I think it's as simple as that. We're paying for a 5-star hotel and we're going camping. Like that's where it's at the moment. Mm. Because those figures are astronomical. And that's where we are at the moment in terms of a managerial change. Should it, could we?
See, the problem is though, you have to pay out the $3 million.
And then you have to hire a new manager. Joe,
Hire a new manager.
Yeah.
Exactly. But your point is it shouldn't have been signed in January.
It shouldn't have been signed in January.
Yeah, well.
Because of the way it was dealt with.
They can't afford to pay out $3 million. Hire a new manager, guts of a million. Mm. I mean, because you're going to have to turn around to a new manager and say, yeah, look, I know what the last guy got.
Money.
Yeah, yeah. Like that scale is going to have to come down slowly. You can't go down to Ryan Giggs' level suddenly. And, you know, 2.5 million would pay for, say, you wanted to target the National Leagues, that's 2.5 million.
Mm.
So we're taking that money, we're paying for the premium services, you say. Like, these are big questions that need to be teased out with John Delaney and the FAI. Like, what's the strategy here? Well, like, so you've taken a huge amount and you're paying for this, mm, and the results aren't great, and then our National League is a question. I'm sure there's money that could go elsewhere.
You're saying about we can't afford to do it. What we can't afford is in 20 months' time or 19 months' time, whatever it is, a European Championships to be on, and three of the games, two of which we would be in if we qualify, and us not be there.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how embarrassing that is going to be?
Well, we're third seeds and the draw is on the 2nd of December in Dublin.
Mm.
So we just have to hope
that we get a good draw.
Yeah.
Right, we're going to break off now. OTBAM has been looking at some of the positives we can take from the Welsh game. Let's have a look.
Reasons to be cheerful from watching the game last night.
Very cheerful.
Look at the list.
Well, actually, there's some on the other page as well, actually.
It's two pages.
No, it's not two full pages. It's on the bottom of another page. There's only about 20 bullet points. From our second possession of the match, we strung 12 passes together. That was one of the first positives of the match.
Did you have to rewind the live record?
I actually started counting from the very start, and I got to 12, and then after that, I was like 4, then 6, then 2, then 1, and I was like, okay, we're not going to the top 12 again for this match. 6 minutes in, James McLean nails David Brooks, positive. 8 minutes in, Callum Robinson plays a crossfield ball that found its man, very positive. 9 minutes in, Cyrus Christie dispossesses Matthew Smith in his own danger area and creates Ireland's first clear-cut chance in 4 years. We'd all remember that. 14 minutes in then, Jeff Hendry crosses the ball and can't beat the first man, But the first man was Jeff Hendricks, so Ireland keep possession. Positive. 16 minutes in, Kevin Long nails David Brooks. 21 minutes in, Harry Arthur completes a crossfield pass to James McLean. We lose the ball immediately, but it doesn't matter. It was a crossfield pass. 24 minutes in, Cyrus Christie makes a good interception. He immediately passes the ball back to Wales, but who cares about that? It was an interception. 29 minutes in, Tyler Roberts of Wales passes the ball straight out of play. Got a good bit of an endorphin out of that one. 30 minutes in, Richard Keogh tries to clear the ball, but the ball wallops off the back of Cyrus Christie. So Ireland are forced to play the ball out of the back and enjoy their longest spell of sustained possession of the match so far. 30 minutes in, Callum Robinson completes a crossfield pass to Matt Doherty. Doherty totally miscontrols the ball, but who cares about that? Matt Doherty wins a corner against Ben Davies. 37 minutes in, the Aviva Stadium goes wild. 40 minutes in, McLean to Hendrick to O'Brien to Robinson. Shot is blocked outside the box, but we're now officially Brazil. 50 minutes in, Ben Davies attempts a crossfield pass, but is a mile away from any teammate. He plays for Spurs. 53 minutes in, Jeff Hendrick performs a backheel slide tackle and nails David Brooks in the process. 58 minutes in, Wales free kick in a dangerous position. There's a feeling of relief because of Gareth Bale being injured. There's a feeling of elation because some lad who plays for Derby County is standing over it. And for some reason, that is where the list of positive ends. Oh, and the Welsh kits, that was another positive.
Made me giggle. What was up with Dave there? Was he a bit subdued or something? Was he not like the early mornings?
I don't know.
That was good.
Yeah, it was good. We're now officially Brazil.
You're now officially Brazil.
I'm worried because the tactics board is out.
Why are you worried, John?
Well, last time I came away fairly depressed from the tactics board, I won't lie.
Okay, so today we're going to just kind of have a quick look at...
Today, kids. I feel like, is this Blue Peter? Oh, my God.
Right, so a lot's been made about the system. We're in white. We talked about the back three. Geez, the ball's gone. Joe, take over for a minute.
It's your left.
The back three, stroke back five. So if we focus on...
What are you trying to get at Denmark, here? Because this is our Denmark-Wales.
A little bit of evolution. Okay. Gone from Saturday into Tuesday.
Yeah.
From back three, stroke back five. At times against Denmark, I think we'd all agree. Sisto, Dahlberg and Braithwaite and these type of areas. This was a big issue. So if Dahlberg came on to... our left-sided centre-half, which was Kevin Long. Mm-hmm. He obviously has to pick him up. But there is an issue of shuffling across. So Kevin Long, left-sided centre-half. When Dalsgaard, the right-back, was pushing up into advanced areas, this is where the issue happens. So if, for instance, Dalsgaard, the right-back for Brentford and for Denmark is on the ball, what should happen but wasn't happening, and we've seen this with James McLean, arms in the air, looking back, Kevin Long staying a little bit more secure, defensive, defending the 18-yard box. McLean should have been out to engage Dalsgaard. And then what happens is Kevin Long shuffles across. Your centre of the three centre-halves, Duffy comes across, Keogh comes across. And then Matt Doherty really comes nice and narrow. Yeah. And if anything, he leaves him out of this area here. But he's always obviously aware of Sisto coming in at the right times.
Yeah.
Now, this is what happened against Wales. That did happen. So Conor Roberts, right back for Wales, bombing on. James McLean engaged him. And time again, even if it was a little bit further up the pitch, I think we've seen this quite a lot. Kevin Long coming into areas where maybe he's not so comfortable, but I think he did it better. So I know Breeny was saying before about work being done on the training ground, very much doubt it. Whether that was player-led, work and video analysis,
it definitely improved. Yeah, yeah. So in short, on Saturday, Kevin Long wanted to be nice and cosy and have as much protection as possible, so was pulling James McLean onto him. And you saw the other night, Long stepped out a bit more, pushed McLean on, and we were better for it.
Better for it. And I think when you think about the Cyrus Christie chance that he could have, should have scored, what happened was James McLean was up in this area of the pitch, higher up in the opposition half. Mm. So we had bodies forward. We had Cyrus Christie obviously going and engaging young Matt Smith. We had Hendrick on the front foot.
Yeah.
And what you don't see on TV, but I said to you last night, you were at the game, what you would have seen was the back three, stroke back five, was on the halfway line, was in and around the halfway line. So there's not 60 yards between them. The gap was probably 40 yards from front man to the back man.
It's a good point worth making because certainly after Saturday, one of the real cliches from a lot of people was, well, McLean can't play left wing back. Mm. Can't. He's too deep and you're robbing too much from further up the field.
Yeah.
But actually what the other night shows, if the back three, the back five are in order and the two wing backs are pushed on a bit more, it's maybe not the worst position at all for McLean to play in at times. Sometimes his pace is better coming from deep, arguably, you know, knock it by a lad.
Rather than getting him with his back to play and having to play that little
space to run into.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree with that, but it needs working on. without a shadow of a doubt. The other area where I would have a little bit of concern, I just like balance.
Yeah.
So Kevin Long coming into these areas, whether it's in possession, so he steps out, James McLean has gone a little bit higher. It's just not easy for him. So it's something he's going to have to adapt, something he's going to have to tweak. I think I heard Kenny talking to you about playing the left side of a centre-half. You see, it's normally, traditionally, the more senior of the players just kind of take that role on. Right. Because the other players haven't had as much games. I wouldn't like to see Duffy there because he's not great on his left foot.
Yeah.
Derek Williams could be an option. But
is it just because players are predominantly right-footed?
Yeah, well, what would happen would be if a team set up against this, so if Ireland are playing that back three now, if I'm facing that, I'm letting nothing come down Ireland's right-hand side. So I'm forcing it as the opposition. I'm forcing it into an area. If we pull these up into these areas, right, I am not letting that ball go down the right-hand side, because what happens is you've got Richard Keogh stepping out on his favourite right foot, being able to pick passes.
Okay.
Whereas Kevin Long, you know that type of pass, so the angle of approach from the striker or an advanced midfielder as he comes onto him, or the winger, he's going to keep him down that side of the pitch. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be quite limited in terms of the service. But on the flip side of that, we need to do more to give him an easier pass.
Sure.
Or an out ball as an absolute minimum. So if he's coming into this area, the centre forward, it's going to be realistic in terms of the distance between the units, the centre forward can't be over here.
Yeah, sure.
He's got to be over here, and it's got to be a clip ball over the midfield as a minimum. That's something he's going to have to get better on. I'd be very surprised if he's not going to be working on that between now and next month's international. Yeah. Stepping out, little clip balls with his left foot. I'd expect to see a little bit of improvement from him.
Okay, so big takeaway is from Saturday to Tuesday, Doherty and especially McLean, I think it was
played
worse.
Played like wing-backs.
They played like wing-backs. That was much
not
better.
Not full-backs, yeah. With three centre-backs.
So suggests a bit of work was done.
Yeah, I think so.
Whether it was the players talking over breakfast or whether it was O'Neill, either way it was done.
Yeah, I agree. The other aspect I want to speak about is in possession, and I'm just going to touch on Wales here, okay? So Tuesday night, and I've already spoke about Usain Roberts and the way the Welsh kind of FA set up. Let me get the Ireland team back into position. So let me go, we'll go. I don't want to get in there. I couldn't see that last week and watch the pack. So let's start our three centre-halves. Mm-hmm. There's Harry Arthur. We'll get James McLean back a little bit. Matt Doherty. Callum Robinson just floating. We'll put him there, right? So the back four, you had Smith, you had Joe Allen.
Yeah.
There's your three there. That were played behind Tyler Roberts as the lone striker. So the ball's in possession. The full-backs are the full width of the pitch, so it stretches it. At times, centre-halves, very comfortable dropping out into deeper areas.
Yeah.
But in the main, in the second half in particular, I thought they tweaked it. Matt Smith in the first half was coming into these areas, trying to get on the ball. He gave the ball away a little bit cheap. It's Cyrus Christie, could have cost his team.
Yeah.
You have to expect that from young players. Second half,
Matt Smith's an 18, 19-year-old.
18, yeah. Plays at Vitesse, or no, 20s actually. So he played a little bit like that. So at times in the second half, it looked like a four behind him. And the onus was on Joe Allen to receive possession in these areas. Now, when that was happening, he's got the options of fullbacks, because again, if they move it quick enough, our wing-back can't quite get there.
Yeah.
So again, that in-between position. So if we say what I was saying, Matt Doherty push on, Keogh on that. What happens and what should happen should be bang across, centre-half. James McLean should give a little bit of cover. When you're playing against the back three, where's our weakness now, Joe? Where do we look a little bit vulnerable?
Down the flanks.
Yeah. Switch of play, which Joe Allen's very capable on. We've seen that quite a lot in terms of switching a play. But the onus is on, there's your safe ball. And with players playing full of confidence and well-drilled, whether it was Smith in these areas in the first half, but more so Joe Allen in the second half, driving in, and these areas are here. You have a 3-4 behind Tyler Roberts, and the movement is good, maybe running off to create space, drags a centre-half, maybe drags a Harry Arthur. There's room then for wingers to roll inside.
Yeah. So why, if they push Smith on, and you can see how that makes life tricky further up there, they're just left with Joe Allen floating around here.
Yeah.
Surely someone can stop Joe Allen then.
Well, I would have liked Callum Robinson to have done that role early in the second half in particular. So if the ball starts with James Chester, can you force him one way? Okay, you can't. You force him this way. Then your angle of approach, we spoke about last week, you can't go back to him to give him cheap possession to go out the other side. When that's happening as it's travelling, Ashley Williams on his left foot, can Callum Robinson then lock on?
Yeah.
Then as that's travelling, can you get organised quickly behind it? And we speak constantly about this wing-back, centre-half relationship. Can you get out to try and stop that? It didn't happen as much as it should. And it was a little bit too cheap. But the point I'm getting at, Joe, is that we know going into each game that what way are we going to play? Yeah. Not quite sure. We know exactly what Wales are going to play right from the off, from him coming in possession. This is what we're going to do. We'll make mistakes because they're young players. We're prepared to sacrifice that. And even Matt Smith the other night, he gets away with one, but then he still has the bravery to get on the ball and try and dictate.
Yeah, he was good.
Very, very good.
You know this midfield three here?
Yeah.
Hendrick and Arter and Christie. So even Gary's in agreement that Harry Arter makes that slide tackle because he just shouldn't be a defensive base.
Yeah.
What is this perfect midfield three for Ireland? Because ultimately...
With all the personnel available?
Yeah, because ultimately I was watching last night and a lot of passes, I think that back three, the back five, but the back three kept putting balls into these three.
Yeah.
And these three kept giving it straight back to them. So who are the three in there? We don't have Wes.
Yeah.
God bless him. I take him back in the morning, by the way, if he wants to come back.
He's still available.
Honestly, SOS. He should be talked into coming back. We don't have Wes to get turned. Mm. None of those three, for me, are reliable enough to get turned, honestly. So
well, what I think at the moment, right, this is the way it looked the other night, okay? Yeah. So Richard Keogh on the ball.
Yeah.
There's the options there, right? It looked a little bit like a diamond at times, didn't it?
Yeah, Robinson at the tip.
Robinson
top,
at the tip. Cyrus Christie to the right. Jeff to the left. Jeff was quite bright at top, but again, he was kind of secure in his possession rather than breaking lines.
Yeah.
I think with Harry Arter, Gary alluded to it in complete agreement. I do not want in this area of the pitch.
Okay. Even on the ball, not just defensively.
On the ball, okay. I just think he's better in this area here. If we can get him on the ball here, driving with it, and Gary's seen him play for Cardiff I have, driving force, front foot, second balls. Let's not forget how Neil Warnock play.
Okay.
I think the ideal one available.
Arter is that you're putting Arter there in the starting team. Everyone back.
Him, Hendrick, or him and Brady, it depends if you want to stick with this type of system.
Okay.
I think James McCarthy is the best we have because he has the mobility and he also has the awareness of screening positions to pick up when the ball's down the far end to stop counter-attacks. And I would expect now with his time out of the game with the injury that there will be a level of maturity and a real appetite to come and impact it because you're getting to that age now where you're thinking, come on, come on. We've been saying that for a few years, but he's certainly capable.
So come March, if you've McCarthy here at the base, if you have, let's say we sit down and go, do you know what, in Euro 2016 it worked. Let's put in Brady and let's put in Hendrick and let's see can we recapture a bit of something.
Yeah, and you were saying about...
That wouldn't be a bad trade then.
No, not at all. And you were saying about Cyrus Christie gets a pass because it's not his position. I'm on board with that.
Martin O'Neill doesn't get a pass for that, but Cyrus Christie does.
Yeah. Brady, Hendrick, Arter, whoever it is, at the moment, go back to the conference levels, that is why they are not getting on the ball in these areas because they are so low in conference. And even when they are getting on the ball, the conference to play that pass just isn't there.
Never mind play the pass, they don't even turn to look for the pass.
I think Jeff Hendrick did the other night.
Do you?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I thought he tried the other night. It was better than his performance against Denmark. I prefer him in that position. I don't like him as a number 10. Again, what Gary Breen mentioned, he's played it for Burnley.
Yeah.
And now he's been sacrificed with them going to a 4-4-2. He's not playing regularly for them in a two-man midfield, legs and energy.
Hendrick made the point this week that this is where he wants to play.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to be there. He said, people are judging me off Euro 2016. In Euro 2016, I was in a three.
Yeah.
And I was there. It was McCarthy and Brady, wasn't it?
Yeah, McCarthy, yeah. Brady and Hendrick.
So actually, people are judging me when I'm in McCarthy's position. They're judging me when we're playing a different formation somewhere else.
Wes's position.
Hendrick has said, put me there in a three, one of the two more forward-thinking players. McCarthy there. I mean, that'll give you a bit of cause for hope for March. That's a positive. A
little bit. See, I told you we'd get some.
There you go.
On another positive note, I want to chat about our 19s.
Oh, yeah.
So they've had a good week. They've qualified now. Two qualification processes for 17s and 19s. You go through the initial lot and then you go to the elite qualification phase. So a lot's made of, we haven't qualified. It's not as easy. Seedings help, a little bit like it's going to help us or not help us in the case maybe coming into March time for the crunch games. But it's the same for the underage sides. So they've won their three games really, really well. And quite rightly, they're getting some positive headlines.
Yeah.
There's quite a few players played during the week for the 19s who I would have worked with the 16s, 17s and 18s over the last couple of years. And lots of talent. And I've already mentioned about the conveyor belt from 15s, 16s, Jason O'Donoghue, Paul Assam, Colm O'Brien. Then you've got Jim Crawford, 18s, Tom Mowen, 19s. They're all in sync about what way the teams play. And it's twofold. So they look to play, They all play a variation of a 4-3-3. There's a little bit of flexibility with that, depending on personnel. If you've got two really good strikers, maybe you might be able to play one of them a little bit narrow and an out-and-out winger on the other side. There's a bit of give and take. But they play in a similar type of way. Try and play with purpose. But on the flip side, if you're playing against a team like the Dutch the other day, you're able to be very, very difficult to break down. They drop in. They can play a counter-attacking style. So they show different strings to the bow. But obviously it depends what happens at club levels, how well these players develop. But some of them, Joe, supremely talented young players.
I keep hearing about Troy Parrott for one.
Yeah, he's not a player I've personally worked with, but I've seen him play, and he's the one obviously that got a lot of headlines in the Euros for the 17s. Yeah. He's been fast-tracked, and rightly so, into the 19s. Got a hat-trick the other day. He's doing very well at Spurs, playing in their 23s team. And I think kind of the general consensus amongst all the underage coaches, scouts that would go and watch games, he's one of the brightest sparks to come out of Ireland in the last 10 to 15 years.
Okay, good.
But again, depends on how that progress and development goes at Spurs.
Yeah. The other names, I know you jotted down a few, Aaron Bulger, Conor Coventry, Leo O'Connor.
Well, Leo O'Connor's the captain of the team. He is an under-19. Troy's obviously still an under-17.
Yeah.
You've got Adam Eda as an 18. Leo O'Connor, Man United, plays regularly for the 23s, right back, left back, but played centre-half.
Why do we keep producing really good fullbacks?
Yeah. He's actually playing centre-half at the moment because he can read the game that well. He's so quick. Very, very well placed in terms of when teams hit us on the counter-attack, he's able to recover because he's so fast and so quick. So he's another one without a shadow of a doubt. Adam Eda at Norwich, again, an under-18, so we're playing a year younger, shows the development that he has, playing really well at Norwich. Yeah. Big, strong, powerful centre-forward, crying out for one of them.
Yeah.
Still only 18 years of age, playing at Norwich. Aaron Bulger, I think he suffered a little bit at Shamrock Rovers this year because he's been that close to the first team. He's always involved, always in the squad, gets a few minutes here and there. But whether he's played enough minutes overall, whatever level it's been in the younger teams, or he certainly features heavily for our underage teams, when I'm talking about Rovers.
Yeah.
And his midfield partner, Conor Coventry, who made his debut for West Ham a few weeks ago, big, big fan of his.
Okay.
Got a wise head on his young shoulders. Spoke about information given to him. Takes it on very, very easily. Very athletic. And plays alongside Bulger in centre midfield. Bulger would be the out-and-out sitter.
Yeah.
And then Conor Coventry licensed to get forward and support play.
It's such a precarious thing, obviously, at that age, and players can look very good. You know, I was reading in that Emmett Malone piece as well, he was just mentioning the 19s. So the last time the 19s actually made it to the finals was 2011. They got to a semi-final. So you would think 2011, geez, we're going to get a real batch out of a semi-final making team. The only two, really, 7 years on, are Jeff Hendrick and Matt Doherty, who's just won his fourth cap. So it is very precarious. When you look at the quality that's there, is it superior to what was there 5, 6, 7 years ago?
I would suggest so, but a lot of that is dependent on what they do at club level.
Exactly.
And there's another couple of names I want to chuck into this. Right, there's two players, Andy Lyons, who plays for Bowes, and Will Ferry, who plays for Southampton. If you go back 2 years ago when I was heavily involved with the underage teams, they weren't quite ready, probably. And
ready for what?
To be playing at that. At the international teams, they were in and out. They may have got left out of squads. And what they've done, in particular Andy Lyons, instead of thinking, do you know what, screw yous, screw you international manager, or screw you whoever is at club level, he's thought, do you know what, I'm going to use that as motivation. You don't think I'm ready, do you not? I'm going to go and work, and I'm going to work, and I'm going to develop. Physically looks like a different player. And he's gone on now.
Yeah.
So this is what can happen in the space of 2 years, the way the players can maybe fall a little bit, or in their two particular cases, excel.
And it still is an uncomfortable truth for us all that, yes, the national leagues, which we've discussed, should be in place and should be working. But to a point, they are still, the really top players are still spending the vast majority of their time at English academies, and you're hoping that they're getting good coaching there. That is where we are still.
We're hoping, absolutely. There's another point I want to make just briefly about this is, if you see what Wales do, and I will keep going back to them, but we have played them twice in the last
Wales,
month. Well, I just like the way they do things, and the fact that sometimes with them, it doesn't matter what those players are doing at club level. So I'm mentioning some of these young, very, very talented Irish players, right?
Yeah.
So the approach I would have with them would be, go and cherry pick who you think is really ready. If it's Troy Parrott or if it's Leo O'Connor, whoever it is, cherry pick them, right? We've been here before, we've got players involved too much and then the press get hold of it and it just gets bumped up. do your research in terms of what they're like as an individual. If he gets called into the Ireland squad, will it go to his head? Will that detract from his development? But the point I'm making is, if we bring him into a squad and have him part of a squad for the next 12, 18, 24 months, getting him used to it, getting him part of it, it gives him the profile. It may well help his club career in tandem because of that profile. Mm. Rather than waiting for Leo Connor to gate crash a Man United side, why don't we do it the other way around and try and help development that way? Because we are reliant on what they do at club level. But if we can help them along in that way, might not get a Man United team, but you know what? A good championship team or a team in Holland like the Jack Bourne route a few years ago may well suit him for his development. So we get these players and we give them the platform. It's not just, you know, they're just playing at 19s level or they're just playing 23s football in England. It's not real, is it? It's not real. Get them part of it. Play them in one of the summer friendlies in the US. See how they adapt being involved in a senior environment and how they deal with that type of profile.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So that was all I wanted to make on that. Right, where are we going to? Can we go to... Oh, we've got a few comments, have we? Probably going to batter you, Jordy. Philo on Twitter, is it even boutique camping we're getting or just general admission? Come on, Philo, come on. Graham on YouTube, can we get a few words on Stephen Kenny? No, why is no one taking him as a serious candidate? It's crazy. Name under a small nation. We're a manager, hasn't been finished. But anyway, Stephen Kenny, look, it's all ifs, buts, maybe. I think, look, I'm not getting into the discussion of who should be taken over. It's not getting changed. So Stephen Kenny has done a remarkable job, in my opinion, but you know, it's not really the debate at the moment.
No, we're waiting until 2020.
Yeah,
that's where we are.
Yeah, I'm totally with that.
Does Stephen Kenny, as a quick one, do you suspect, we all know what he's done, do you suspect there will be a slight sense of who is this guy from certain players based over there who mightn't be as familiar with Kenny? Like, does he need to make a bit of a mark in the Europa League even to take that job?
Yeah, I think there would be a little bit of... I think what happens is, right, Henry's got the job at Monaco this week, okay? Henry walks in that door, instantly has the respect.
He's got credit in the bank.
Instantly.
Yeah.
You can very quickly lose that.
Yeah, sure. And I'm sure Kenny could come in and win it very quickly.
The opposite way. Yeah. So a little bit of scepticism might surround that. Oh, I'm not quite sure, blah, blah, blah. But everything you hear, everything you see at Dundalk, what they do, is very, very impressive. The way he comes across, nice fella, very diligent in the way he goes about his work. So certainly for me, wouldn't be an issue.
I think, by the way, he is being talked about.
Yeah, I would
say. Someone texted in. He does get mentioned.
And rightly so.
Yeah, yeah. So I think he is in the conversation. The next 2 years are huge 2 years for him.
Yeah, yeah. Before we go, I just want to touch on England. Did you see any of that game the other night against Spain?
I was in here, so I saw all the goals.
And bobs.
I then went back and watched a bit of highlights because I was curious. Yeah. And it seems like,
one of the best games.
The goals were phenomenal.
Yeah. So there's a lot made, isn't there, about Southgate and the team he has, and they've no creativity. I've been quite vocal in his support. I'm not getting carried away and jumping on the bandwagon about what they achieved in the World Cup. An opportunity popped up in the World Cup, and they took decent advantage of that.
Yeah.
Possibly could have gone to the final. Anyway, what he did was very, very impressive. The way he goes about his business is very impressive. The brave moves of playing the young players, not just going for the players at 30, 40 caps, let's get him in, he'll do a job. It's very much forward thinking. And what he does have at his disposal is that unbelievable pace and athleticism within the team. Mm. And with Ross Barkley doing quite well at Chelsea, he may well prove to be the type of creative player that he may well... Let's not forget, that was a second choice midfield. His first choice midfield is Henderson, Dele Alli and Jesse Lingard. The other night, it was Harry Winks who... Some particularly play for Spurs. Mm. Barkley and Eric Dyer.
Yeah. It's impressive, yeah.
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 It's very impressive. So,
You like what you're seeing there?
I do like what I'm seeing, yeah. I think it's brave the way he's going and they're decent to watch. People look, Croatia tonight was a lot made. I covered the game for Virgin. Not a great watch, but look, Croatia weren't any great shakes either. And with these young players, with this evolution, with this train of new players and...
Yeah.
He went back to a back four, showed he was able to tweak things. You kind of get little meanders in the road.
Sorry, 30 seconds. I know I have to go. A very quick one. You can answer this question. Not everyone can. Martin O'Neill raised the issue of the pitch before the Welsh game. He said it's a big pitch. Like, we're not very athletically gifted. You've just reminded me there because you're talking about the English athleticism and pace. Is the Aviva pitch a good bit bigger than what you'd be facing in the Premier League most weeks? Is it a big old nuisance of a pitch for
a
midfielder?
It's a big pitch. It's not as big as Parky Quave.
No, I know it's not a big Kevin Kilbane about that. So what's the biggest pitch in the Premier League and how does the Aviva compare?
Wembley's huge. Wembley feels huge. Yeah. Whether that's kind of just looking around, yeah, you kind of think it. But there's no doubt certain pitch you go to. Like, for instance, Stoke back in the day, when you used to go and play against them, Tony Pulis used to make it literally like... I would always judge a pitch. Obviously, you get out into the centre circle. I think that's why I used to go out into the pitch, just get a feel for the air, for size, angles, all the rest of it. And you would judge, obviously, the length from the centre circle, but then I would always have a glance at between the 18-yard box out to the byline. If that was quite narrow, have a look at Stokes when it was Tony Pulis. If, I don't know why Martin can't do that, whether it's UEFA regulation, it has to be an exact size. But I think there's parameters that you can work within.
Well, it doesn't have to be an exact size. If he's saying it's bigger than other pitches, then it's not the same size of the pitches. So it doesn't have to be an exact size. It has to be a parameter.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering if Martin O'Neill has lifted the lid on this issue that you've all been saying for years, that Aviva pitch is massive. Not especially.
No. Look, it always feels bigger when you're chasing shadows, doesn't it? Okay. Being there.
So it's standard-ish pitch.
Standard-ish pitch. I don't think it was a big talk about the major.
And you and Glenn Whelan looking at each other. This pitch is massive.
Huge.
That'd make sense. I'm just kidding.
Come on. So we'll end on a positive.
Pitches were big in Poland too. No, that's not fair. That's not fair.
Is this Joe's last week? Yeah. Yeah.
That pitch against Spain was massive. Sorry.
Getting jabbed all over.
Oh, dear.
And on that note,
Iniesta's 50 yards away. It's not, he's five. Get to him. Sorry, go on.
Thanks for coming in.
No worries, buddy. I appreciate it. No, that was a good discussion. I enjoyed it. Thanks.
That was good. Tried to put a little bit of a positive spin. So I suppose the positives taken from this are hopefully we'll be players fit for, I'm ruling out next month, really. Kind of a bit of a suck it and see.
He needs to avoid a hammering, though.
Yeah, I can't see that happening. Yeah. Can't see that happening. I don't think that'll...
Yeah, but he needs to. You know, they can't go.
Yeah, I agree. So for me, it's about March. And then under-19s, some of the younger players, take a few positives from it. And that's about it.
Okay.
Joe, been a pleasure. Thank
pleasure,
you.
Pleasure, Keith. Thanks.
We will be back next Thursday, normal time. Until then, take care.
Football on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.